My name's Jamal, and you're listening to Gas in the Mecca, an anime analysis podcast where I take a look at the shows that I love, the people that make them, and the concepts that bring them together. From fascinating cinematography to game-changing moments, I'm on a journey to try and make sense of it all, episode by episode. Get comfortable, grab a snack, and enjoy the show. Welcome back to another episode of Gas in the Mecca, and in today's episode, we're doing something a bit more focused today, and we're looking at Serenae Season 2 specifically. This is one of my most anticipated shows from 2023, and I've just really needed to talk about it. It's been a long time since it only came out at the beginning of the year, but it's at the moment, I'll just say it right at the beginning, it's my candidate for anime of the year. But I'm not actually going to go into that. I'm not really trying to talk about what makes Serenae as a whole good, but I really want to talk about why Serenae Season 2 is a great sequel relative to Season 1, because I think there's just so much to unpack in that area. And that's what surprised me the most. It's just the fact that this show managed to improve itself so much. So that's what we're going to cover today. Specifically, I really want to hone in on this idea of the sequel, because I think Serenae Season 2 really changed my opinion as to what makes a good sequel in the space of anime, or more like a very specific type of sequel and how it works. So I want to hone in on what makes a good sequel in this instance, or why Serenae Season 2 is a good sequel to Season 1. And what I think I've learned, because I think it's really changed how I'm going to start conceptualizing them from this point onwards. So I want to address the idea of the sequel using, of course, Serenae Season 2 as that example. So there's not much to say going forward. Let's just hop right into it. That is episode 119, A Look into Serenae Season 2. I should begin this episode by saying that honestly, I'm not much of a quote-unquote sequel guy. That sounds a bit strange. Obviously, I'm talking about a sequel, and when it comes to shows that I genuinely like, be it Serenae, for example, or any other show, then I will simply just continue watching it because I like it. But that being said, I'm also really into new things. When I say new things, it's not always, the new flashy shonen that's out. I have like a short attention span. I just need to keep hopping to new things. It's not like that, but I'm just really interested in new experiences and trying out different things. It comes more from a place of curiosity, wanting to see what else is out there as opposed to, continuing something in which I've already seen. Obviously, there are shows that I like and I want to see them complete themselves. March comes in like a lion, Season 3, I'm looking at you. But at the same time, I just really enjoy these fresh, self-contained experiences, so to speak. And I think that's why, and just this to add a bit of context, this is why I talk about 2021 like a lot. We did also have some good sequels that year, don't get me wrong, namely SSS Steiner Zenon, which I'd say kind of elevated the Gridman series entirely, but also just a lot of, not even all original, but just lots of self-contained, neat shows that came out each season. I'm talking, your One Direct Priorities and your Odd Taxis and your Heikemon Guitaris. I really liked those, and I really liked how sort of self-contained and small they were, but also providing a new, fresh experience each season. So I really liked that. And so I suppose me talking about sequels is a bit of a surprise because it's not something that I'm massively into in the same way. But at the end of the day, this isn't 2021 or 2022. We're currently in 2023 now. It's almost like we're in the future. And Serenae has managed to actually open my eyes to the appeal of the sequel, what the magic of the sequel, and show me what a satisfying follow-up looks like. And I'm not trying to say that I've never experienced a satisfying follow-up before, but I'd say Serenae specifically showed me some things that I didn't really, some things that I took for granted. And now I'm starting to really recognize again what a really great follow-up looks like. I've already thrown the term around so many times, but I think any good analysis should sort of begin by defining our terms. And in this case, it's discussing this notion of the sequel or addressing it. I'm sure everyone knows what a sequel is, but I want to address it because anime, as we know, is a pretty diverse space and there are different ways in which one can do a sequel. And I've noticed that not all sequels are built equal. And so I do want to mention that just before we head into discussing Serenity Season 2 as a sequel relative to perhaps other anime, because this isn't a thing that's shared across everything. It sounds rather obvious, but I think I'd rather cover those grounds. In this instance, I'm talking about sequel as a linear follow-up, which I think is what everyone, or on the most part, thinks of when they think of sequel, as opposed to perhaps, you know, what I've also defined as, say, the batch sequel, so to speak. So for example, an example of a sort of linear follow-up sequel would be, just for an example that I think most people will get, is like an Attack on Titan Season 2. It's a direct follow-up from the previous events of Attack on Titan Season 1. And obviously those things stack upon each other. The context and the ideas and everything is layered on top of one another. And it's obviously very ill-advised to watch a Season 2 in this instance when it's in this linear format relative to a Season 1. What I'm not talking about, though, and that's really why I wanted to talk about, because I wanted to just exclude what I'm not mentioning, because I think that requires its own sort of analysis and discussion. What I'm not talking about is something like, once again, I'm trying to use another example that I think more people would get, is say a Mushishi Season 2, which I'd say sits more in parallel with its first season. That's not trying to say that there's no chronology in the show, but it's not really, once the context and so on isn't really based on the chronology entirely, every episode sits relatively parallel to one another. They don't necessarily stack upon each other because it's in this episodic format. And so it comes across more like, as I said before, a batch, in the sense that it's a batch of new episodes that sit in tandem to the first season, but not necessarily stack on top of each other, where you have to watch one to then get the other, to then get the other, like the linear model would. But once again, that's not what we're talking about, but I just wanted to mention that because there are different ways of doing this sort of sequel thing, and not everyone does it in the same way. Not every show intends to do it in the way in which I'm discussing here. So this isn't necessarily universal analysis of sequels in general, but this is analysis of a certain type of sequel, and we're talking about Serenity Season 2 in this instance. So let's get to talking about the actual show itself, and of course, spoilers for Serenity Season 2. It's pretty obvious, but I recommend watching it. It's amazing. Come back and listen to this after you've seen it. It's only 13 episodes. I'm sure you'll have a good time. That said, Serenity the Linking Shot, or Season 2, is a direct follow-up from Season 1 of the Kyoto Animation series that aired in 2018. In terms of the actual story itself, though, Serenity the Linking Shot picks up directly where we left off in Season 1. So that's obviously in the wake of Kazuma's victory at the prefectural tournament, which saw Minato finally put his target panic to rest, which is part of the consequences of the trauma in which he faced after, you know, losing his mother and such. And yeah, they managed to beat Kurosaki High School. Things are on the up for Kazuma, and yeah, it's a nice way to end that first season. I think that synopsis, though, leads us very nicely into one of the main points I want to discuss, though. And it's the fact that I kind of only really, in terms of characters that I mentioned, I only really mentioned Minato. And partially because I just wanted to give a short synopsis, so there's that. But also because I think this season, or the first season, is very much just about him for the most part. And I'd say it's mostly about him. I'd also say by extension, it's about Masa-san as well. While I don't think this is a bad thing, I think it comes with its drawbacks. And this is also something that I think Season 2 makes up for. The best way I can really define Season 1 of Serenity, this might sound like a criticism when it's not really, but it has its own embedded criticisms, I'd say, but it's not all bad. But the best way to define it, in my opinion, would be self-centered, in the sense that it's very much about one, if not two people. It's about a very narrow cross-section of the cast, as opposed to the cast as a whole. I'd say one of the biggest trade-offs, if not just straight-up negatives, of having a show that's very much has a pretty large cast, relatively speaking, or a decently sized cast, and focusing on a very small, narrow cross section of it. It's just the fact that I think it makes a lot of the other characters on the side feel almost like an afterthought or just quite shallow, just by virtue of course, again, honing in on a few people for the majority of the runtime. And I think while I'm not against this sort of, I suppose, depth study model, that's what I'm calling it. I like to give everything model names, I suppose. While I'm not against it, I think it's kind of counterintuitive for Suriné, which is obviously about a team sport. It's about collaboration and teamwork and the rest of it. And so I think when you focus on a few people in the team, it undermines the idea of the team, I'd say, just because you're meant to, it's meant to feel like a united effort. And then it feels like it's all about one person, if not two people. So that was something that I found a bit weird about that season. But I, once again, there are things that are good about it, which I'll discuss. One additional point on this, and while it's not necessarily a science per se, I don't think, but I think it sort of causes the rest of the cast to come across almost as perhaps a bit archetypal, or just it relies a lot on shorthands for getting across who these characters are. Like I look at Kaito, for example, and he's very much defined as the angry one in the team. And of course, we've all seen like sports shows before, or like any sort of like group dynamic, and the angry one, the cute one, all those sorts of things are pretty standard, and things that it doesn't feel particularly human and convincing when you kind of have each one you can point out. Sometimes it's very funny and done intentionally, but I'd say that in the case of Suriné season one, it does feel a bit flat, and something that's definitely one of the main things that I disliked. However, on the other hand, I would say that this perhaps depth approach to the first season sets up very well for season two and how it approaches that as well. By focusing on a small segment of the cast, surprise, surprise, you get a lot out of that small segment of the cast. In this case, Masa and Minato. And I'd say a lot of that comes from that juxtaposition between Masa's relationship with his grandfather and Minato's relationship with his mother before she passed. And while they're not the same, it's a testament to the idea, I'd say, to how people perform in the game of Kudo, and shows that it's far more than just, I suppose, a sport. It's not just a matter of fitness and training. It's emotional and in some ways spiritual, I'd argue. Overall, it's just non-material in how one performs, or at least there's a non-material aspect to it. There's this really nice moment in the first season when Masa is talking with Minato, and he mentions the fact that you can't cure your target panic here, as in you can't cure it on the range. You have to cure your target panic inside. It's about your own life and your own, I suppose, sort of perspective and things like that. So I found that a really cool thing that was introduced in the first season that came out of, I suppose, again, this much more narrow approach. This is why I think the relationship between season one and two really shows. And this is going to be an overall theme of this episode, in the sense that I think season one does kind of walk and does what it has to do with its drawbacks, admittedly, but it has to do that for, I'd say, season two to really run and create a really good holistic experience. And what I mean by this is just how it applies this idea that we discussed of how the emotional health of these Kudo players and their own circumstances and lives and environments affects how they perform on the range. This is applied much broadly to the rest of the cast. The linking shot has so many incredible examples of this, be it Nano and Kaito's clash, I suppose, in that one episode, where a lot of their performance, of course, is linked to their childhoods and their relationship with one another. And you have Kaito's almost tenacity and wanting to win overtly, and Nana, who still wants to win and do well, but also is so focused on, I suppose, saving face and just kind of playing it cool. And how that relationship works is really interesting. It's something we only sort of learn this deep into the show. And we can even talk about the Trio of Girls as well, which finally managed to get their win, their massive W as they deserve. That's something that was perhaps my main issue with the first season. It's just the fact that they felt like the biggest afterthought, like they were just there to be there. Season two actually makes much bigger strides to make them feel like characters and integrated into the entire story. And I like how they didn't necessarily, just rewrite things and just add them into things. It actually follows up very well from the first in how they lost in their own match in that season. And then in season two, it's about proving themselves and proving things to themselves, not to everyone else, but proving that, you know, they're also really good and they have a lot of talent and skill as well. That scene, you know, with the petals and everything was just incredible. Perhaps my highlight of the season outside of the final match. We can also talk about people like Nikaido. Nikaido obviously is characters only introduced in the second season, and they kind of get that second season writing treatment, which is a very good thing, in fact, just because they're put into much more context. Whereas I'd say what season one lacks is the fact that a lot of the other characters aren't put into much context. They kind of exist, but they're not really shown to have lives and lives outside of the central nucleus of the entire thing being Minato. Oh, not as much as I would have liked. Whereas I'd say season two and once again, Kaido and Nikaido are directly put into that. We're shown directly what he struggles with, of obviously those being financial problems and the fact that this school is very underfunded when it comes to stuff like extracurricular stuff like Kudo and having to fund these things basically themselves. Stuff like that, I think, is really good and humanizes these characters much more. So Nikaido, I think, was really great from the start because they were given that so quickly and they're continuously drip-fed that throughout the season, which is something I wish we could have seen for other characters in season one, but obviously this is also a very short show, so I understand why it was done now. However, I guess it's better late than never, and season two makes up for that with massive strides. This gets us to, I'd say, the main second point and hook, probably the last main point of this episode regarding Serene specifically. I'm starting to view sequels differently. And I think it's this idea that sequels aren't just extensions of the former thing, but I think there's a degree of learning and iteration in that process. In writing this episode and preparing for it, I've tried to build this case that season two essentially learns from the first season's misgivings, at least to some extent. Of course, it's worth taking into account that this is an adaptation of a light novel, which was ultimately written before Serenity season two, the linking shot, was a thing anyway in 2023. So, of course, take the idea of learning with a grain of salt, but I still think my point still holds water in the sense that I think they treated this not just as let's continue the story of Serene, but I feel like the team and Yamura and co. just really took into account how do we tell the story of Serene even better than we did before, as opposed to just how do we continue to tell it. I think there's a difference there. It's quite minor, it's quite subtle, but it's really important, and Serenity Season 2, once again, is a really good example of how you do that and how you pay attention to those small things to make it even better and just make an overall better experience for the viewer that gets across those ideas that you want to tell, those ideas that even go all the way back to Season 1, those extended ideas and enhance them. Although this is obviously a narrative that I've tried to build, I want to make this episode interesting and want to have something to say, but at the same time, this is also something that I'm not just taking out of nowhere, and this is something that I think Yamamura genuinely believes himself. And a lot of this comes from an interview with Fibri, which is an amazing site, by the way, if you're into anything regarding like animation production and you want to know things from the staff themselves. they do an incredible job of talking to all these different creatives, many of which, you know, we've spoken about on this podcast and so many more as well. So I highly recommend it. I'll try and link those in the description. Yammer talks really extensively about how they try to obviously sort of improve upon what they did. And I think part of it is him underselling the first season. Like, he is a director at the end of the day. And I think there's a bit of humbleness to it. They sound very humble from when I was reading it, but I get what they mean either way. This is an interview in Japanese, and just disclosure, I don't speak or read Japanese. So this, I am basing this on machine translation, but once again, I'm not taking the direct translations. I'm not going to quote him because that's likely to be inaccurate. But just from the general gist of what I was getting from this interview, he talks a bit about, you know, the camera work and the 3D integration with the matches and how they tried to add much more to this to, I'd say, make them feel more flowy, I suppose. And from a viewer perspective, I recognized this not just when I was, you know, watching it just for the sake of the podcast, but when I was just watching it back in January and such, this is something that I actually felt, and it goes a long way for the experience overall. I'd say season two goes even further to try and give you an understanding and appreciation for what the characters are doing when they are shooting arrows. They give you much more of an understanding of the force and impact of each shot. And in turn, I think that's really good for understanding how one's personal self is reflected in the matches as well. It's kind of helping to communicate those ideas which we discussed earlier. For example, in the interview, they allude to the idea that season one's archery was perhaps a bit more flat in how it was composed. Even though I've seen the first season, it's been a long time still. It felt like a long time anyway. And so, you know, I did a bit of typing on sakubara.com, that magical website. And honestly, I get what they're saying. It depends on the scene, but from what I observed, there are often about like 2 to 3 components to how the, was 2-3 like visual components when it comes to how the matches are shot. At first, you usually have like the build up to the shot, the drawing of the bow, of course. That's pretty important after what it's coming from there. And then sometimes they show the shot traveling in midair for a short time. And then, of course, the final part being, where it landed relative to the target. This is often, a shot from like a side angle, or at least from, side profile to see where it landed relative to target. And it's pretty straightforward, and it's very good, don't get me wrong. Like, this isn't me trying to say, oh man, the season one's archery was rubbish. Like, no, it's incredible, don't get me wrong here. But I'd say season two goes above and beyond to really make this experience feel far more cohesive. And that's not even to say that the linking shot completely gets rid of this formula. It's a very reliable one, and it wouldn't really be feasible to get rid of this either, I don't think. That would be insane. Like, this is Kyoto Animation at the end of the day, but that's a lot of work if you were to try and make every match and every shot even more than it was in the first season. That's crazy, and that's not something I'm suggesting, but they do a lot more here. And I'd say, especially in these key moments, they go out of their way to, I'd say, bring you on for the ride and smoothen out the process of shooting and the journey the arrow takes to the target. Sometimes they even use 3D backgrounds to aid this experience. For example, I talk about Shu in episode 7 when he's at his private range, and when he's shooting his arrow, he's all calm and collected, and you see the arrow go right from his bow all the way to the target. And it's almost like you're sitting on the arrow in a way, or at least you're hovering on a bird right next to the arrow, and you get to see it for all its journey. That was really satisfying and a really great moment for Shu, as, you know, he kind of was realizing that he has a lot of people supporting him as well. So that was a big moment. You also have that rather, I suppose, regrettable moment from Minato in episode 3 when he's almost so focused, almost to a fault. And you have that part where he shoots the arrow, and of course, like, everywhere goes black, and you get to see the arrow fly right from him all the way to the target. And that moment was really cool. Overall, I'd say there's a much more apparent display of how the thought and focus of the player converts into the shot and the position of it. It's that idea that we discussed before being these non-fitness related things directly affecting performance, the emotional health, the mental health, the circumstances, be it financial or again emotional things that impact how one focuses, and that ultimately affects how they perform on the range. And by bringing us along for the ride, you get to see that almost cause and effect relationship much more closely interlinked. Maybe I'm zooming too in. No, I don't think I'm zooming too in on this, but I know it does sound like wild to say, like, showing the boat traveling is a direct, it shows us about the mental health of the characters. While I'm not saying that exactly, that's an exaggeration, I think there's just much more synergy between the technical elements and the written elements of this show. And by doing those small things that Yamamura discusses, it does a lot for me. And I think that's why I'm able to speak about this with such confidence, because they themselves are very confident about the idea of making this experience far more immersive by tweaking and iterating on those things in which they didn't manage to do or did less of in season one. I think this is proof of an overall theme that I always try to talk about on this podcast, in how people are thinking about these things. These aren't things that people are just kind of doing accidentally. People like Yamamura and co. are thinking about how they can make this experience far more cohesive and deliver a better experience for delivering those narrative messages much better. And so, yeah, him talking about these things was really important to me. I think it proves something that I really like stand for when it comes to talking about animation. It's just how it's such a human process that people are very intentional about. People don't make animation by mistake. And him doing these small things, which might seem small to the viewer, but are actually massive and have massive narrative implications, I think is just a really neat thing. So I wanted to cover that. Just talking about those technical and visual elements a bit more, I really like how much more diverse this season is from a technical standpoint. I mean this more when it comes to the effects animation. And this is something I realized, like, while season one again is great, I'm not even here to, I know this episode sounds a lot like, oh, well, season one was okay, season two was amazing. I don't dislike season one of Sorone, I should just state that. I don't think it's the best season of anime I've ever seen or something. And I definitely notice its flaws, but I like it genuinely, and by the end of it, it really clicks. That said, I still think season two just does even better for a show I already liked. The diversity of the effects animation, I think, is really cool, where, you know, season one is very focused on this leaf motif, and it's really nice. It's really cool. But I think I like how this season tries to be far more diverse in its understanding of its cast, and this just the fact that everyone is different with different struggles, different feelings, different lives, and it recognizes that in more ways than one, and more than just its writing, but also in its animation too. And that's why I really liked, for example, episode 6, where Rika, Yunoa, and Noh have their whole almost comeback moment, and instead of, you know, the leaves and such for their synergy and their ikigai, which is this was manifested on screen, they use these cherry blossoms instead, as they sort of surround them when they're like in their moment and in their zone. I think what I like very specifically about this though is how it's different to how they portray the synergy of the boys, like as was done in season one with the leaves. I think that's just because it shows how they have different styles. They have different styles of shooting. They have their own, they're at their own stage in their own journey. They're not on the boys' journey. They're on their own and they're doing their own thing. And so, yeah, displaying that visually was really powerful to me. That's how you display agency. That's how you display strength, strength to do your own thing and go your own way and achieve what you want, how you want. And so, yeah, I really likes that. I'm getting a bit too passionate now. But yeah, I really found that moment very good. That's what I really liked. That's perhaps my highlight of the entire season for that reason. Just bringing that part of the cast to life was a massive thing for me. And the thing that I thought that wasn't going to be done, honestly, if I'm going to be real. but they delivered. And Yammer even mentions it in the interview as well. So that made me really happy. And just seeing that all come to light and sort of recognizing what was missing in season one and almost rectifying as best as possible in season two, it meant a lot to me. And I think that was a really good thing. So I think the massive takeaway from this episode and what I've tried to illustrate is that we have to think of the sequel, or at least as I mentioned before, this almost linear edition of the sequel, we have to think about it much differently, or I think we can think about it differently, and Serenity Season 2 opened my eyes to that. We have to think of the sequel not just as a continuation of what was done before, but almost as a learning opportunity to do something new and develop what we built before. It's an opportunity to grow and improve how we tell the story of said thing. Admittedly, Serenade the Linking Shot is not the only show that has showed me this, but I'd say it's the most recent one that has. I think a good sequel isn't just one in which is good in and of itself, but it's one that makes you appreciate what it's in conversation with, being its previous season, the thing it's stacked on. And that's what I think season two really did for me. It made me appreciate in some ways, while it made me recognize its pitfalls, admittedly, but at the same time, it made me realize that there was reason behind what it was setting up. And it made me come to appreciate what it was doing before and what it was trying to say and how it was able to incorporate and build on those things for the second season. It made me realize that season one had a lot of intention to it. And so I think sequels are far more in depth than perhaps, at least maybe to me, maybe everyone is thinking this, but I've learned a lot from this experience. I've learned that I think sequels are pretty important and not just, you know, doing the same old thing and continuing the formula. A great sequel, as I've come to learn with Serenade Season 2, is one which embraces the intentionality of animation and uses that to its advantage, uses it to build and grow from what it did before and almost evaluate those choices that were made and propel them forward to almost, as I said before, optimize, although again, I don't really have a better word, but optimize and refine those, that's probably a better one, to create a much better experience. These things can be really small, but once again, small things, especially in animation, go a long way, and Serenity Season 2 showed me this. In short, Serenity Season 2 is amazing, and I think it's probably going to be my anime of the year, unless something really incredible swoops in as well. And I think that's just because it does a great job of staying true to itself in a lot of ways, but also developing upon where it perhaps fell short in its first season. Thank you for listening to this episode of the podcast. I hope you did enjoy it. I hope it made some sort of sense, although like I didn't really structure this very well, I'll admit. But yeah, I hope you had a good time and you at least took something from it. As for announcements and things like that, I have one thing, and that is the fact that this podcast is now on TikTok. I have a total of 2 TikToks, but yeah, if you want to follow me on there, you can. There'll be a link in the description. It's probably on the page right now. I'll edit that in on the video version. It's mostly going to be stuff that I also put on YouTube Shorts as well. But if you prefer it there, and if you just prefer like short clips, stuff like that, then yeah, feel free to do that. I'm mostly doing it to just spread the word a bit more about the podcast, so you can get 60-second doses of me talking about random anime stuff there. So yeah, enjoy. As for the usual stuff, you can support this podcast by doing a few things. You can review the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Of course, on YouTube as well, you can like, subscribe, all the usual stuff, you know what to do. And in the comments, if you have seen Serenade Season 2, tell me what you think about it. Do you disagree with my take that Season 2 makes up for Season 1? Is Season 2 just as awful as Season 1? And also, what do you think about sequels as well? Do you think sequels are like an opportunity? Am I over-characterizing this a bit too much? What do you think is important in a sequel? All of that in the comments would be awesome. I'd love to discuss that. And then finally, for the other social media stuff, you can follow me on Twitter, X, whatever it is. I'm just gonna quit Twitter, okay? Follow me on Twitter at Get in the Mecca. You can follow me on TikTok as well at Get in the Mecca. There will be more TikToks there shortly. I'm gonna probably cut some clips from this very episode as well, so that'll be on TikTok as well. And yeah, I think that's it for this episode. Thank you so much for watching and or listening. And I will see you hopefully very shortly again for another look at something related to anime. So I'll see you soon. Bye. The music in this episode goes as follows. Chill, Adventure Time Revised, On the Road Again, and Synthwave by Alex. And all this music is done by Alex McCulloch and is under the public domain.